We're taping Great Biblical Personalities today, October 9th. And we're starting with source number 15 on page 7. Okay. This is a medrash in Koheles Rabbah about Hashem comparing Moshe to the Avos. Right. It's fascinating because the exact opposite of what we're reading here appears in a medrash that Rashi brings down in his Perush al HaTorah. The basic point is of this medrash is that Moshe's emunah was far greater than that of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. If you're familiar with Rashi, Moshe sees people complaining to him after the straw was taken away from them, right? Moshe and Bnei Israel, Parah took the straw from them. They had to get their own straw, right? When Moshe first came. So the people complained to Moshe. He put a sword in Parah's hand to kill us. More people are dying because we can't put up, we can't make up that daily allotment. And they're killing us because of you. If you had not been here, my father would be alive. Right? So they said, you put a sword in Paro's hand to kill us. He doesn't need an excuse to kill us. Now you gave him one. So Moshe comes back to Hashem and says, Hashem, from the moment I came, things got worse for them. So you can say, Moshe, you knew this would happen. God told you Paro's not going to let you out. So Moshe's answer to God is, listen, God, I understand that. I'm not complaining about the situation. You told me the situation. My complaint is that the Israelite on the street, the Hebrew on the street, is not saying that this is part of God's plan to harden Pharaoh's heart so that he utterly destroys them and rips the Egypt out of all the Jews so that they can go and start their own land. That's not what they're saying. They're not saying this is part of your plan. They're saying that this is happening because of my ineptitude. And that's what I told you at the bush when I kept on telling you that I'm not the man for this job. That's my complaint to you. Right? I can live with the fact that this is part of your plan. You told me it's your plan. I understand that. But this is what I told you. Right? And that's what they're saying. So Hashem says, okay, I'll talk to you right now. You'll see what I'll do with Paro Moshe. The story is about to start. And now comes the fireworks. So Rashi on that pasuk says, Moshe, your emunah was not like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. When I tested them, did Avraham say, why is there a famine? I told Avraham, this is your land. Did Avraham say, why is it so hard for me to find a burial place for my wife? Did Yitzchak complain when he's facing his father's knife? Did Yaakov complain when he had famine and he had trouble with his children, etc., etc.? Now, they might have, it's just not written, I mean, in the pasuk, but anyway. But Rashi is quoting how Moshe's faith does not compare to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov.
So right? Moshe has better faith?
Much worse than theirs.
All right.
Why are you complaining when you see the first setback? Right? No complaints.
Yeah.
Right? So Rashi brings down, this is the beginning of Parshas Va'era. But don't you see, why am I telling you this? This is that there's no monolithic approach to these things in Chazal. This Medrash source number 15 is doing the exact opposite. It's telling that the faith of Moshe is profoundly greater than Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov.
Oh, 15 things greater? I love things worse. Like
I'm quoting a different medrash that Rashi cites.
This one's saying it's better.
So okay. 15 is doing the exact opposite. All I'm trying to tell you is, a medrash we saw earlier about one person who finds fault with Avraham because he's trying to makari gloat. And then the next guy in the same medrash says, Avraham is to be condemned for not being Makariv Lot. How did Lot become an Oisvarf? Why didn't you Makariv him? You can Makariv the whole world, not your own nephew. So come on, give me a break. The point is that there's no monolithic approach in Chazal meaning the whole corpus of various Midrashim, to this issue. Even within Bereshis Rabbah, you can see very different approaches. And you can use one in a drasha in Va'era, and then use another one in a drasha in Bezosa Bracha. Use the same rabbi. Because that's what we do. We quote from Mamre Chazal, and we have... Why? Because life changes. I'm saying? Life is inconsistent because Hashem can tell Avraham one day, Yitzchak is your future, Yitzchak Yikarela Chazara, right? And the next day tell him, take him up to a mountain and Valeva Allah. And man is always going to be confronted with those contradictions. What do you do with it? What are you going to argue with God? Are you going to accept it? What are you going to do with that? That's all right. That's our challenge of reading text. Right? Because life is inconsistent. Get on with it. Right? That's called. Where is this message, by the way?
Kohelet
Rabbah. Come on. It's obvious. Go ahead. Yes.
To me, it makes sense that the Avot would have more faith in God than Moshe would, because their whole relationship with God was based on faith. Avraham was the first one to discover God, and therefore he had to have faith in him that he exists in the first place. With Moshe, this was a tradition, this is a religion that is now being passed down to him. And after he met with God at the mountain, I don't think he didn't have faith. I think it's that after he saw that he really existed, he got a little frustrated when he almost didn't deliver on his day, on his promise.
That is Moshe. Moshe is saying, it's personal. I feel for them, but I told you I'm not the guy. This is part of his humility. Right? Okay. So let's see what this message does. You see source number 15? Got it? Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe, Avos HaOlo, Ma Yesh Lahem Olai. Im Bosi Lidaktik Achareyem, Ani Yesh Li Olayem. I have lots to complain about what they did. Avram Yesh Li Olav Shnema B'mo Yedaki Yerushena. Right? Remember that one? This is like a review. See, I wrote a review of the Midrash we've done. We saw a Gemara about this. Not one, but three things that were wrong. Right? The Gemara in the Dara, remember? For why we deserve to have the slavery in Egypt? Bama Idaki Yiroshem. I remind you, remember Rashi in his Perush HaTorah excuses that. He says, Aaron was not being in disbelief by saying, God, how do I know? Come on, God. Keep telling me a great nation. How do I know that? Let me say, my word isn't enough for you, Avram? So Rashi says that when Avram said, how do I know I'll inherit, he really meant something else. He said, he meant, how do I know that I'll deserve this? How do I know that even if my descendants turn on you, that this will still come true? If that was Avram's question, then it's legitimate. That's how Rashi explains Avram's question in his Perush HaTorah. Remember what we did? Is that in Rashi's Perush to Yeshayahu, remember the pasuk? Paraphrase it to me. Come on, guys. Look alive. Avicha harishon chata, says Yeshayahu. Your first father sinned. Okay, we did this so that the belief could go on wrong. Your first father sinned.
Adam.
Most commentaries say it's Adam, possibly even Noah. Rashi says it's Avraham. And what was the sin?
He went to Egypt.
No, he said, Bama'idah Yerushana. I mean, that's a legitimate question, because Rashi also justifies that, the trip to Egypt. So Ramban says that was a mistake. Right, we'll get into all this. All right, but we're still in Chazal. We're not up to Rishon yet. All right, what was Yitzchak's problem? What did Yitzchak ever do wrong? Yitzchak is Esav, and he's Nesik, Shemar is Esav, so Nesik. It's not Torah, that Parsha. How can you have a pasuk in Nevi'im that says, God hates Esav, and it says his father loved him? So that is, I find all kinds of answers to that question. But this favoritism of Esav, this Medrash finds problematic.
So if Avraham would have loved Yishmael, that would have been a problem also?
No, there's no pasuk in Tanakh that says Hashem hates Yishmael.
It's hard to blame Yitzchak for that, because it's his firstborn son.
Oh, please, let's understand Drash. This pasuk that says Esav Sanesi is in Malachi 1,000 years after Esav lived. Right? And it's Esav's descendants that he's talking about. Right? So, really, it's forbidden to love someone who has a descendant 1,000 years later who turns bad? I mean, but that's... So understand the drash here. The drash is saying, you know, and Yitzchak, a lot of problems in Parshas Toldos could have been resolved if you were more with the ball about who your children were. Right? Okay, or if you would listen more to Rivka when she spoke to you about these things. Right? Okay, anyway, that's what this is saying. And Yaakov, Yishtiel of Shomar, Nistirod Rechai Me Hashem, Kivan Sheomar, Shemishvati Lohem Boch. L'man shemchor ba'osa shor nitmalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu rachamim. Alright, so, the one about Yaakov, this is very strange. The one about Yaakov is based on a pasuk in Yeshayahu. What does Yaakov have to do with Yeshayahu? Yeshayahu is speaking as if though he's Yaakov. So, that's lame. Why should that be Yaakov's problem? But then when Moshe said, why is this brought down here? Because Moshe, when begging God to forgive Bnei Israel for the Egel, he said, God, you can't let this happen to the descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And Hashem is telling Moshe, I'm not saving them in the zechus of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I'm saving them in the zechus of
you.
So then the man picks up on that. Obviously, you couldn't bring down what Rashi says in Vayera, because Rashi doesn't make sense in this context, in what Hashem is telling Moshe. There's a Gemara Brachas like this. But I'm just trying to tell you, the reason why I'm bringing you this Medrash, in contrast to the Medrash about Rashi, is that, again, there's no one monolithic approach in Chazal on this. You know what I'm saying? You will get a broad picture, like the one I just did about 10 minutes ago, about Lot and Abraham, whether he's to be condemned for not makariv him, or to be condemned for trying to makariv him. It's two different rabbis who gave those opinions, but they're both brought down in Bereshis Rabbah because, you know, there's room, and this time this is the way to do it, and this time that's the way to do it. And if in Loach's time this is the way you should do it, in Abraham's time this is the way you should do it. Yes?
This is why they say Moshe has more Emuna in Hashem than Abraham and Yaakov, is because, like you said with Abraham, you said, how do I know that I'll be worthy of it? Something like that, and then you said, not you, Rashi said, not you, but your descendants, they might not be worthy. So Abraham's already questioning his descendants, but when Moshe would always say, I'm sticking with these Jewish people, God, kill me. If you kill them, kill me with them. So he's kind of taking over them.
You know, I spoke about that this Shabbos, where the flood is called in Yeshayahu Bnei Noach. And the Medrash says, why refer to the flood as Noach's flood, Noach's water? Right? So that Noach could have stopped it. If Moshe or Abraham was there, there wouldn't have been a flood. Because Moshe would have grabbed God and said, if you don't save them, Mecheni no Mesifrecha.
Erase
with group.
Oh,
so what I just did?
Rearrange it.
Right? You see the
remaining
of the letter?
To be fair,
I said it's dead. Save the world. I'm not going to, it's hard to. But I'm just saying there are always sometimes comparisons to make. And listen, I'll point to another Rashi. Rashi in Parshas. Rashi Parshas Kukas says, in my opinion, the sin of hitting the rock is not so great. The reason why Moshe was denied entry into the land because of hitting the rock is because he did it in public. So, in my opinion, when Moshe said, did I give birth to these people? Am I supposed to carry them in my arms like a mother carries a child? Now, that's Parshas Balos, after they complained about the meat that they weren't eating and they hated the money. And Moshe lost it there. So Rashi said, that sin is much worse. Why was he denied entry into the land of Israel there? It's an important lesson. All this is about taking to these things to heart and understanding how the rabbis used the biblical persona. What was why was that not as bad? Because he was in private there.
It says in
the Torah, Hashem, straight one to the other. Small sins are much greater if you do them in public.
It says in the Torah that because you hit your rock, you're not going into the land.
Right, because it was public. That would have been forgiven if he did it in private. Okay, anyway, I told you last class that sources 16, 17, and 18 is going to be a large portion of what we would do. Just learning these three sources is likely to take up a whole class, but I'm going to try to squeeze it into what's left. Okay? First is Medrash Muva B'Torah Shlema Parshas Vayeshev. It's very rare for me to cite a citation like this in any class, because we don't really know its absolute origin. Torah Shlema is a work on the Parsha, another monumental work that took place over many years. Its author is Menachem Kasher, he lived past his 100th year. And he started with Parashas, of course. And he brought just down about just about every single thing that anyone said about every pasuk between his footnotes, and which are voluminous, and the text. Now his parish on the whole, he died when he was up to Matos, I believe. And his son started working on a similar kind of work, but died in his father's lifetime. And his son's work was called Pshuto Shel Mikra, I think it's called. Pshuto Shel Mikra. And his son only got Parashas in Noach done before he passed away. But it's such an amazing work. You see in the base manager, it's called Torah Shlema. And now, it used to be, when I was in, like college, it used to be in, like, 60 volumes. This thick paper. It was these black books that would easily take over two rows of this whole desk. And now, because paper is made very thin, now it's printed in, I think, 10 or 11 volumes, and each volume is about that thick. And you can actually, you know, it's workable. Everyone should have this, right? Now, Torah Shlema usually tells you, where did I find this statement I'm making? But in this particular footnote, he just says, Medrash Shera'isi. It's just a Medrash that's quoted all around, and no one really knows its source. There are a lot of such Yerushalmis. Everyone says, it's Yerushalmi, but it's not in Yerushalmi. It's just, that's what people call it. I can tell you a number of halachas you know that it's allegedly in Yerushalmi. Yeah, it's not there. All right? Okay, let's see what this Medrash is. The Medrash says here that when Yosef was, and you know, you see the word Mida Keneged Mida? Why did Midrashim love Mida Keneged Mida so much? Because
it teaches you a lesson.
Yeah, that's life. It's Mida Keneged Mida. You know, you're getting what you reap. What you sow is basically the theme of the Bible. Is it not? Mm-hmm. Is that not what every Navi had to tell us? So, when Yosef was, even this is maybe the Rashi brings down, is that Yosef accused them of Eva Menachai. It says that after they sold him, they slaughtered a goat, shepherd goat, and they ate meat. Just to show that, you know, they didn't think anything of the fact that they're never going to see their brother again. They had a little barbecue afterwards, right?
Now I really take opposite.
Yeah, exactly. Beautiful. Right. That's the beautiful stuff of Medrash, is to contrast and compare. That really, it makes your brain work, and it makes you, you're going to be able to think clearly into your 90s, because you're used to, your mind is exercised to say, these brothers did something miserable. If you hear that before, you just made that up now.
I mean,
that'd be amazing if you just came to it now. Okay, good. No, it's good memory. So if you just came to it now, that's amazing. Yeah. So Aaron loses his kid, you know, loses someone close, and to him, he meets it's anathema, it's horrible. No, these guys want to get rid of him. They toasted getting rid of him, right? But the question the Medrash is asking is, why Dafka a goat? Why did the Torah have to tell me that they shechted the goat? Why not a chicken? You know,
she's considered. Like, yeah,
that's a line from a Marx brother. So, but why not a? Why not a? Who cares? You say about Yishchak Tzu Benima. Yishchak Tzu. Who cares what it is? So look what this Medrash says. Al Deshe Yaakov Rima Es Aviv Bigdim Yisim. You see where this is going? Shelokach Habracha Me'esav. Bekach Rimu Banav. Because Yaakov was supposed to bring his father, you know, deer meat, that's his two little tzoyah, his venison. But yeah, but they didn't have no deer in the house, so Rivka told him to go back in the backyard and get some goats. Right? So, because Yaakov tricked his father with goats, so too, he's tricked his father when they brought up a coat drenched in blood. That was the blood of that goat that they had eaten. Right? So Hakirna, take a look at this. Right? Now then he quotes the end of the Medrash, which is quoted by the Rambam. So it's interesting. If the Rambam had this Medrash someplace, maybe we can trace it to the Rambam. Because the Rambam in the Mor Nebuchim explains that the reason why a chatos is most, best majority of the time is Si'iri Zimechot L'chatos, right? All over the Torah. Chatos in Yom Kippur, Chatos in Rosh Chodesh, Chatos in all the holidays, throughout Sukkot, Yitimekot, Chatos, Zerah HaShomim, Bavoshnayim, right? Rosh Chodesh, every Chatos is usually a goat. Why a goat more than any other animal? And the Rambam writes, to atone for the goats that Yosef's brothers used. He doesn't mention Yaakov there, but that Yosef's brothers used when taking the blood to their father. Right? So I'm not sure if it may be different. Same source of this. But anyway, but you see, it's not so much does anybody really care what they ate? No. Why was the Torah why did the Torah care enough to tell us what they ate? That's what I'm talking about. Right? So let it be, Yaakov, you know? You didn't realize it at the time. Of course you didn't say, hey, this isn't Yosef, this is goat blood. Now I know I turned my father blood. Of course that didn't happen. He thought it was Yosef's blood. But it's the reader hearing this irony of... And then, when the brothers showed their father the coat, they said, Hakerna, take a look. Whose coat is this? You recognize it? Okay. In the very next story, the same two words appear with the man who gave the advice to do all these things. What am I talking about? When Yehuda wanted to get his some of his personal effects back from that woman that he hired, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Tamar in the next chapter, and then the very next chapter, it's the very next story. Right? He wanted to, remember what she wanted from him?
Ring, staff.
Okay, that's what she took as collateral. What was he saying?
She wanted him to marry.
Well, that's at the end, but what was the payment?
No.
Two goats, snake the maize in, once again, right? And there, he brings the two goats to his friend and says, hey, where was that Kadesha? We talked about the Kadesha's owner thing, right? Where was that Kadesha that was here in this town that I visited recently? And they said, no Kadesha in this town, right? So he says, oh, chaval on my stuff. What's going on here? I lost my hand. She just cut down. She could have had two goats instead of that. What value was there in that, right? She's going to steal my identity. She's got my ring. She can sign all kinds of checks with that ring. Right? So, when they find out that Tamar, who's been waiting for a third son of you to get married to, apparently they had a din back then also, that if you're married to a man who dies before having children, you have to stay married to someone in the family. You can't marry out. Right? And when they find out that she's pregnant, what does Yehuda say to do to her?
Burn her.
Now, that's good that you said it that way. Because burn her doesn't mean kill her. Burn her means put on a nun for niuf, nuefis. Burn something on her to remind her that she committed adultery. Right? That wouldn't even
add
it. What? Doesn't mean kill her. It's inconceivable that he would want to kill the woman. Because, and it's mashma from the Hebrew. Anyway. Then she says, wait a second, hold on. I can identify the father of this child. He's the one who owns these things here. And what does she tell him?
Joseph.
She does. She says two words. Hakerna! Right? And Yehuda is supposed to, whether this is before the sale of Yosef, like some of us should say, because there couldn't be so much time within the 20 years to get married, have a child who gets older, three children who are older, they die, and then someone else gets older to have children. It's going to take 30 years. There's not enough time. By that time, they were all in Egypt, right? So, whenever you want to say this story happened, I guess the point of Chazal is that it happened after the sale of Yosef, I guess. So that when he hears the word Hakerna from her, he is supposed to, or at least the reader is, he's supposed to say, Hakerna, oh, wait a second. I used those same words when I was tricking my father. So what comes around goes around. Now, it doesn't always go around. That's what the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, and when Hillel was looking at the skull in the water, remember when he told it? Alas, poor York, I know him well. What did he say?
Like, this guy killed, like, someone, that's why he's killed.
You killed someone else, and that's why you're in the water. Right?
Or so you can't do that.
And the one who killed you will be killed also. There's a Gemara in Sukkah that mentions this, and Rashi quotes a Medrash in Devarim Rabbah that says, some people don't like to say this. Many people killed others violently, dies peacefully in their beds. But what Hillel was saying, though, is that the way it ought to be is that on a prophecy, he was a prophet. He doesn't know that many people get killed violently who did nothing wrong in their lives. What is he, like acting like one of Eeyore's friends? How dare you talk that way? What he's saying is that this is what ought to be. Be careful, okay? So that's the key. That's the you see the trend that's happening with source 16? Yaakov tricks with goats. Yaakov gets tricked with goats. They trick him by saying Haker Na. And Yehuda, who's the one who convinced everyone to do this, also gets shamed in the town with the Haker Na. Right? Yehuda backs down. You know, Yehuda might, if he was a real rogue, he would have said, I don't know whose stuff that is. Burner! Right? You know, instead he says, you know what, she's Tzotka Mimeni. I'm sorry, I was very wrong in this whole story. And I realize what's happening now, and I should have given her my third son. I thought she's just killing off my boys. What can I say? She's a black widow, but she's, you know, that's what that means. I realize that I made a mistake. Okay, the next one, 17. When Esav heard that Yaakov took his bracha, his response in the text is Vayitzak Sevako Gidola Umara.
This is Umara when you take Bukhara.
That's his
name. Umara. This is where he realized that Yaakov came in after Yaakov had come in before to take the bracha away. Okay. I'm sorry.
Miss a word, it makes it misses you.
Okay. So it's hard to come below the raw Adma Ot. Right? So You know, Esav, in all fairness, you sold this to your brother when you were younger. Right? You should have told that to your father before. Ibn Ezra explains it amazingly. He says that Yitzchak squandered Avraham's wealth. He brings five different proofs that Yitzchak was broke. And Esav said, what is the Bechorah mean to me anyway? A double portion? Father's broke, and he's probably going to outlive me anyway. I face death for every day in the field. I'm not talking about this right now. I'm going to die if you don't give me this food. Yaakov purchased the birthright with something very valuable. He had a baseball signed by the 27 Yankees. He gave him something of great, great value and said, okay, you have this. And he cemented that deal by giving him the lentils he was cooking. Right? And then Esav said, okay, now it's mine. I own this thing. And now you, whenever father dies, you can have the birthright, whatever that meant at the time. The whole portion, the extra half, whatever it is. Okay? So now that it's time for Yaakov, you know, for the split to be made, what changed in between? I know what changed in between. Yitzchak became very wealthy in between. It says, Yitzchak or Zayimei or Sharin. He came back to money. So now he says, what did I just do? I just sold the stock and it went up 100 times. Right? So, this is hidden from him. Okay? And yet, this Medrash finds fault with Yaakov to the point that, now it's crucial to understand where this Medrash is going. It's a short little Medrash, three lines. You see what it says? Z'aka achas hizik Yaakov le'esav, dichsiv kishmo esav estivrei aviv ha'yizak z'aka, v'hecha nifralo, that's, what, you see what these three words mean? means this is crucial for this course. Ve'echa nifralo, meaning, Yaakov, you caused pain to someone. That goes into a bank account. Ve'echa nifralo, where did Yaakov pay that back? You cause pain to any person. That's just this is a morality play here. And where does it pay back? Read on.
B'shushan
habira, shnemar, v'yizach ze'akah gedolo umara ad me'od. I'm afraid this medrash is misquoted. In its zeal to show how similar to Pesukim are. No, it was Tzak. One is Tzak, one is Zak. It's the same word.
Twice
Esther. Yeah. It's Medrash is a little overzealous, if you ask me. The words Ad Ma'od do not appear in Esther. All right, let's start with still. Vayitzak Zakal Gadol Mora, Vayitzak Zakal Gadol Mora. Right? The Medrash was overzealous in showing how similar Mordechai's reaction to what Haman did, Haman being a direct descendant of Esav, right?
Yeah.
Agogi, Amalek, right? And Mordechai, a direct descendant of Yaakov, of course. Binyamin. So, look, Yaakov, you caused this pain in your brother. Hey, come in trouble! You gotta be paid for that! And that's why you see so many beautiful midrashim about David being punished, where the Gemara is in Brachas, and say, David was happy that he was punished, so my descendants don't have to suffer for this.
Right?
Let the money be taken out of my account. Right? Good or bad, things that you do have consequences. Not only for you, but for your children, and 1,000 years later, because from Horatius to Esther is the two bookends of Tanakh. Hecha Nifralo, all the way to the end of Tanakh history. Ramban's Chiddush is that it even goes beyond Tanakh. Right? I must admit, there's a Gemara at the end of Makos that says that Yechezkel prayed to God for that not to work any longer for bad things. So when the Ramban says Masa Abo Simon Labanim, it's just that it's an omen. It doesn't mean that we're being punished because of what Yaakov did to Esav. It means that we're just an ominous thing. That's certainly what we'll hear and learn about. But this Medrash is saying, Yaakov, you caused your brother to cry, so that's going to have to come back. You know, that pain went all the way down to Haman. Okay?
That just shows how sensitive Judaism is to people's feelings.
Right, to pain, yeah. And what we're getting at here is that basically this Medrash is saying is that the author of Esther is purposely using a terminology to record Mordechai's reactions so that the ear of the reader will tingle and say, wait, I know those words. I didn't hear those words. Oh, yeah. And you say, oh, look at that. Haman to Esav, directed his ancestor. Yaakov, Mordechai to Yaakov. And that's another case that I submit to you of neither to negative me. Right? Okay. Yes.
I think the Midrashim also like Mita Kneged Mita because it really shows that God has a hand in everything when the works happen. I think that.
Right. People get their comeuppance. Right. Word I don't often use, but you know. Okay, let's look at the last one. And then we'll continue next time with 19-20. So it says, Ve'icharach Yaakov Berochel. This is Yaakov keeps having child after child after child with Leah. And Rachel is just sitting there with nothing. Right, so she confronts Yaakov and says, Havali banim, gotta give me some children. If I am Mesa ani, if not, I'm like dead. Right? To watch my sister supplant me, I want to make my place in history. You're the one having the sons, right? I knew your grandfather. No, she didn't. I knew your father, you know. But you know, and she understands that they're part of this destiny. So give me some sons. What's his reaction to her? Not, oh, Rachel, I love you so much more than I could. You know, that That's how, remember who talks to his wife that way? I love you more than 10 sons. I couldn't love you more.
Oh. Is it Naomi? No.
The story you just read a few weeks ago. By the way, even that, when he said that, that is insensitive. Implying that
I'll take care of you. Shmuel's mother,
Hannah. Correct. So, and her husband is Elkanah. Perek Aleph is Eber Shmuel Aleph. So instead, Yaakov not only does not answer with sensitivity, he's angry with her. But Yicharach Yaakov Berochel. And what does he tell her?
Don't pray like that.
Hatachas Elokim Anochi Hashem Anat Mimeich Pribaten. And Chazal say that that's his next line, but it doesn't appear in the text. Am I in the place of God who has kept you from having children? I'm doing my part. Right? You're the one who's infertile. Not me. I'm having children. God's fine with your sister. Right? So, if you have a problem, you take it up with God. What? Yaakov, you didn't read Parshas Tolbos where it says, Vayetzar Yitzchak Hashem Anochach Ishto Ki Akarahi? Right? Infertility is nebuch, a problem in the, that raises its head often in Bereshis. It's not because anybody sinned, it's because the Medrash Hashem likes the tefillah of tzaddikim. But the point is that Yaakov, how do you behave this way? And he said the words, Hatachas Elokim Anochi. Am I in the place of God? Speak to God. Don't make a complaint to me. Right? So the Medrash says, read with me. Vayichar af Yaakov Barucha. Malay Kodesh Baruch. Kacho nimes hameikos? Does it say you speak to someone who's in pain? The Medrash, this is in Bereishis Rabbah. But in other places, I think the way even some Rishonim quote it is, Yaakov, you wouldn't talk to a woman who just accosts you on the street like this. How do you talk to your wife? This is the woman you worked for 7 years, for 14 years actually. How do you talk to her this way? This is a woman you love. So I never made him speak that way that day. I don't know, but so look what the manager says. Can you get it? Chayecha, shebonecha asidim la'amod lifnei bina v'yomar atachas Elokim ani. Chayecha. You have sons already, right? You're proud of them. We mentioned Shem Levi, Yehuda, etc., right? A son she is yet to have with you is going to stand before those others in a time of great tension and say for Bereishis and say these same words. When is that? See, after Yaakov died, right? Yosef is ruling in Egypt. He's going to be ruling another 60, 70 years, right? And he's got his brothers now. Sort of, Mida Keneged Mida, I've got you where I want. Now, what's interesting is that Yosef definitely excused them again and again and again when they met. Excused them, but he did not forgive them. And they didn't ask for it. And we'll see the word. He excuses them. He says, oh, this is all God's workings. I understand that Yosef is very wise. He excuses them again and makes them understand. But when Yaakov died, the brothers come to Yosef and says, our father begged us to tell you not to kill us for what we did to you. Gemara Yavama says that's a big fat lie. A, Yaakov never knew what the brothers did to him. If he had known, we would have four patriarchs today. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Yosef. And then Yosef's children would be the nation. Right? Yaakov never knew what they did to Yosef. Two, even if he had known what they did to Yosef, he wouldn't accuse Yosef of such nefarious intent after the rapprochement. Three, if Yaakov had accused Yosef of thinking that he might kill his sons, wouldn't it make more sense for Yaakov, finish my sentence please,
to go to himself,
to tell Yosef directly, don't kill your brothers after I die?
Well, why wouldn't Yaakov think that his...
It was a big fat lie, but the lie shows that they really feared for their lives.
Why would Yaakov think that Yosef would kill his brother? Because
Jacob and Esau. Like, Esau wanted to kill
Jacob. I understand. Maybe a friend died. He's harboring this feeling all these 17 years since we've met about his brothers. Right? But if Jacob had harbored such a sentiment and accusation of what Yosef might do now that I'm no longer here, Yaakov should tell him directly. It was a big fat lie. But the lie does underline the fact that they did not feel forgiven for what they did. Maybe excused, but not forgiven. Yosef's response to them when they said, please, our father said, don't kill us now that he's no longer here. Right? Remember, Esav said, when my father dies, I'll kill my brother. That's a sentiment the brothers did not share when they brought that blood-drenched coat to their father. Right? So Yosef's response was, Hatachas Elohim ani? Get it? Am I in the place of God? But in other words, he's giving them a harsh answer. If you deserve to be punished for selling me, that punishment has been going on for a long time. And whatever God chooses to do to you, let him do. I will not punish you. You know what your kapara is? This is amazing. It appears in the membership. You're going to have to read about 10 martyrs on Yom Kippur. Amazing. Meshech Chochma writes this in Parshas Vayeshev. That's why we read about the 10 martyrs on Yom Kippur. On Tisha B'Av, to cry and be sad. On Yom Kippur, for atonement. Even though it comes from this wicked Roman king. In other midrashim, it comes from angels. The brothers of Yosef were never forgiven. And it needs kapara. Just like the Egel does, so too does Mechiras Yosef. Always need kapara. Because it involved everybody. Okay? The only one it didn't involve was Binyamin. And get this? That's why Chazal said the Beis Mikdash could be built in his land. Beis Mikdash cannot be built in the land of anyone who sold Yosef. Yosef also didn't sell Yosef. But he was responsible for Mechiras Yosef.
And where's Binyamin?
Like now, Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim. Beis Mikdash can only be built in the land of someone who didn't sell. Who wasn't responsible for Mechiras Yosef.
How was Yosef playing for Mechiras Yosef?
He brought it on himself. That's what the best of his measures is saying.